From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 23rd day of December, 2021. It's the last trading day of the week. The markets are closed tomorrow for the Christmas holiday. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Ben Brown. He's an agricultural economist at University of Missouri Extension, based in Columbia and part of the FAPRI, or Food, Agricultural Policy and Research Institute on that campus. We'll discuss with him the commodity markets, the trade last year, and expectations of how the banking and other systems might rebalance at the end of this year, their index funds, especially the commodity baskets within those funds. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast. We'll take that up with Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm Weather, and we'll do it all right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. It is public radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Ben Brown from University of Missouri Extension, FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute, there in Columbia, is now joining us to talk about the marketplace. Thank you, Ben, so much for being with us today. I want you to think about the year that has just passed and how, in your opinion, the marketplace has differed from previous times. And the easy ones are probably supply chain, but I bet there are a whole bunch of other things that are unique to the 2021 calendar year.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on, Todd. I really appreciate it. It's always fun to do these. And Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners out there as we get ready for the holiday season. But this is an exciting time, and it's a great time to do kind of a year in review for markets, because when we think of index funds, which are combinations of, you know, futures contracts across, you know, they can really be bundles of anything. But in the commodity buckets, a lot of times it's mixtures of energies, stock values, and commodities like corn, soybeans, and wheat, live cattle, hogs, lean hogs. But it also includes some metals like silver, gold, stuff like that tends to be what's in these commodity buckets. And the way these index funds work is, a lot of times when we get towards the end of the year, they have to rebalance those index funds to keep the same weights of the different commodities. And so you can think of, if a commodity has appreciated on the scale, the index then has to sell those shares to bring its value down relative to the others. Or if a commodity has lost value during the year, they have to buy back shares of those to get the total value of that asset back in line with the others. So it's kind of a, you know, it's something that when we get to the end of the year, we're kind of looking back and trying to figure out, okay, over the last year, what has the different commodities within these buckets, what have they done, and kind of what's that going to mean for pressures in the market? And so, you know, a couple of the ones I follow tend to have a mixture of the commodities I listed. And so I'm looking down the list here, and coffee was the big winner for the year, up 87% from January 1 of last year to today. And so, you know, coffee stocks will have to be sold. And of course, that could have some implications in terms of just the technical nature of those markets. But if I'm comparing other commodities, you know, the energy stocks they're all next in line. So gasoline, heating oil, crude oil, natural gas, you know, right down the list. To where when we get down to some of our ag commodities that we're common, you know, familiar with, cotton was up 36% on the year, corn was up 23%, live cattle up 21%, sugar up 21%, wheat up 21%. And so you go down the list, and soybeans were the only, what we would call, you know, commodity that we have here in the Midwest that fell on the year, that is currently valued lower today than it was at the beginning of the year, down 2%. So what that means is that, you know, the market will have to go in and buy shares of soybeans to rebalance some of these funds, these index funds, as we compare them. So it's just kind of a neat time. I throw that out there, not really anything from a, you know, fundamental standpoint. It's just kind of a neat time to kind of look back and see how commodities have performed over the year. In terms of big changes in the marketplace this year, we've certainly seen our fair share of swings, you know, coming out of COVID, having kind of a unique storm, the polar vortex that we had in February that kind of shut down some production, and we're still dealing with some of that lack of production of natural gas and other things from that February cold spell that hurt ethanol production during that time, but is now still affecting us from a fertilizer production standpoint. And so, like, you know, that happened at the beginning of the year. That seems like it was light years ago, but that was just, you know, back in February.
That was the Texas storm you're talking about.
The polar vortex that came all the way down and had large swaths in the Midwest, but made it all the way to Texas, where, you know, they were seeing record low temperatures and our consumption of natural gas was really high. But, you know, it put a damper on our ability to produce ethanol. And we saw weekly ethanol production really fall during that period. But then also, you know, it shut down it lowered the amount of fertilizer we were producing for the upcoming season as well. And so we came into the spring, you know, on a limited supply, and then we used it up, and now we're in a limited supply for fertilizer again this year. And that's just one factor affecting fertilizer, but certainly, you know, that had a big thing. A couple other big things that people don't think about, but I love, you know, to kind of remind folks, is we saw some decent sized changes to market structure in general. The CME Group, or the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, increased the position limits, or so the number of open positions any one person or any one company can have within a commodity within a time period. And while that might not sound like a huge shift, it was exacerbated by the fact that we had a lot of money that people had pent up demand. It was working its way into hedge funds. Those hedge funds were then investing in commodities, and they were allowed to take out large positions, either, you know, long or short within these markets, and taking large positions than they ever had because the position limits were increased. And roughly around that same time, we saw the CME Group increase price limits. And so the amount that an individual commodity could go up or down within a single day also increased. And it differed by commodity, but on average, we had about a 70% increase in price limits, daily price limits. Of course, that became a factor when we got around to June and we saw the nearby soybean contract drop $1.12 in one day. It's the largest single day drop in the history of the soybean contract. Under the previous system, you know, we would have had a floor of 70 cents, but because those position limits were increased earlier in the spring, you know, we had that large drop in soybeans within a day. And as a result, it caused a lot of farmers to look at their margin accounts. Those of the people that had taken out new sales, in the planting period, so May, maybe early June. They, in a lot of cases, didn't have the margin to absorb a dollar loss in the soybean contract. And so then when we got around to that Friday of that week and soybeans rallied 60 cents back, a lot of people had been kicked out of the market due to lack of margin, you know, the size of their margin accounts, and couldn't take advantage of some of that rally. So that was a lesson that we needed to, you know, to make sure that we at least had sizable margin accounts to take into account these sizable swings that we could see going forward. For different things. And then, you know, the big story was really the weather over the summer. We had really good growing conditions across most of the east central part of the country, and the drought affecting the upper plains and the western corn belt. And the question that everybody was asking all season long was, could the east outweigh the west? And we got around to harvest and we found out the crops in the west were a little better than we thought, and the crops in the east weren't as good as what we thought, even though they were still, you know, very good and in some places record yields for corn and soybeans. So it was, you know, that really defined a lot of our growing season. Of course, now we're seeing still some elevated prices. We've had all this discussion around renewable diesel and when it might come onto the market and how big of an impact it could have for the years to come. So, you know, it's an exciting time for markets here at the end of the year when we get to look back and think about what's happened. But then it's also exciting to look ahead into 2022 and think about what could happen there.
I want to discuss just a bit more with you the opening comments you made about the indexes. And I'm wondering, for instance, the 87% increase in coffee, primarily due to a lack of supply. I think that there was a couple of heavy frosts and freezes that impacted the coffee market in coffee crop in South America. So that probably was one of the drivers there. And then soybeans not changing. When they rebalance, is it based off of, in your knowledge of this, how much it has moved within the particular commodity, so 87% increase in coffee, or is it how much it is increased compared to the other commodities within the index basket?
Correct. So everything will have to be balanced back to an even playing field. So for instance, like in the case of coffee, they're not going to sell off 80% coffee. They're going to bring coffee down to where it's in balance with the others. The reason I brought up the shifts is, in a general sense, what we can say is that if an asset or a commodity has increased in the year, that means that they'll have to sell off that asset to get it back down relative to the others. And if an asset has lost value during the year, they'll have to buy back to make the total share of, or the total weight of that commodity within the bundle equal to all the others. So it is in relative terms to everything else or to the other commodities, but we can kind of look at the direction and say, okay, especially in the case of coffee, it was the best performing asset or commodity in that bundle. And so it'll have to be brought down relative to the others to equal everything out.
Yeah. So would be looking back at the rebalance that takes place, soybeans probably not much of a rebalance at all, but they may have to sell corn to make things work properly.
Yeah, it could. And they likely will have to buy soybeans to get them to rebalance, even though they were relatively flat on the year. It's just that we've had so many commodities increase in value that even if you're relatively flat, a lot of times you'll have to buy if you've got 2/3 of the commodity bucket that increased in value. And that's what we had. A large proportion of the commodities gained value. And so even if you were flat on the year, you might still have to buy to get it relative to everything else. And in a perfect world, if all the commodities increase the same amount, no rebalancing would have to take place. But we know that's never the case. So.
Does this have an impact at all on January trade, or is it just a rebalancing that
it
takes
does.
Place?
I mean, it has some technical capabilities, which, I'm kind of a fundamentalist. I believe that there's fundamental concepts below the markets that drive them. But we do get some weird cases where, we might see the indexes rebalance over a period of time. And so we get some funny looking trading days. But for the most part, it has minimal to almost negligent impact. It's very, very small. But it's just something to keep an eye on. And like I said, it's a great way to look back at the previous years. We're looking at all these commodities kind of comparable to the others.
January, February are months when producers will deliver crop, much March as well, old crop, into the system. What are your expectations for the first quarter?
Yeah, so, as we've been looking at some of these deferred contracts, the market carry, the market carry has been very slim. We've got a 2-cent carry into the May time frame between our nearby contract for corn into May. So we've got 2 cents carry. That's not enough to cover, the cost of storage. So the market is telling farmers not to store, and it's been that case pretty much, all year. We haven't really broken out of that metric, and so. From a farmer's standpoint, kind of the way you look at that is, you sell across the scale, and then if you want to re-own, you can to take advantage of a market rally of potential. In the past, what we've seen is when the market is this tight, that's saying that it needs grain right now to be brought into the market, but it's also a possibility of a rally, a future market rally down the road. And so, there's a lot of farmers out there sitting with unpriced grain in their storage and waiting for better prices as we come around the bend or turn into the new year. And I certainly think that's possible. One of the things that, we continue to watch this time of year is South American production. And, last week we had a sizable increase in soybean prices just due to the fact that the outlook for South American weather, especially in southern Brazil and northern Argentina, turned dry again. And certainly many people might have heard about the La Nina impacts of a cooler water at the equator causing a little bit of a drier season in southern Brazil. And given how tight world stocks are across all the commodities, a shortfall of production in a major growing region could have large impacts on prices. So one of the things I've been talking about is I'm probably more optimistic about corn prices as we look ahead than I am soybeans. But soybeans probably has the biggest chance for they have a bigger chance of large swings, either up or down, just given kind of the nature of that commodity and the markets that we're dealing with right now. We could see soybeans fall really fast and we could see them rise really quickly. But, if you look at the fundamentals, corn probably has the more solid supporting fundamentals of the two. And then wheat has kind of been an interesting crop here lately because for the first time in about 15 years, we've had stocks to use in wheat and especially quality milling wheat really tighten up and provide favorable conditions. We spent a good chunk of this fall above $8 price in the wheat contracts, which is strange given that it's usually that time of year, especially early fall when the spring wheat crop is being harvested, that we see market lows in that crop. And so we've seen some really supportive prices. Now, USDA a couple weeks ago did increase Russia wheat production. They increased Australia wheat production. Of course, we saw the market drop about $1 as a result of that or those changes. So, wheat is another crop that has very fundamental, very favorable fundamentals under it. But it's in similarity to soybeans, has some major risk associated with it. And as a result, that's why we're seeing some of these option contracts being as pricey as what they are. Is there's a big upside and downside risk to both soybeans and wheat at the moment. So,
anything else?
Yeah. So if we look ahead to the next year, it's shaping up to be a year where we do expect a sizable production of both corn and soybeans at this point for North America, and the question just turns to demand, especially on the export picture. We here at the Food and Ag Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri, we do expect smaller exports of both corn and soybeans out of the United States to global trading partners, only because the rest of the world has better production moving forward. We kind of had a period where we were the only game in town, and so we had very strong exports for a year, but we do expect them to remain elevated just below where we were this past year. So from a demand side, things are still strong, maybe not as strong as what they were this past year, but still strong, and we expect that to continue going forward.
Thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
You have a good Christmas break.
You too.
That's Ben Brown. He's an agricultural economist from University of Missouri Extension and the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. We're at WILLAG.org. On this Thursday, the last trading day of this week, we'll talk with Mike Tenera at T-Storm Weather about what's been happening in South America as it's related to the weather forecast. Hey, happy holidays to you, Mike, and thanks for being with us today.
Hey, thanks. Same to you, Todd. Yeah, great being here as always.
Well, let's discuss the weather forecast and the climate that they've had to this point in South America. I think you've got some history that we might go through, and then we should discuss what we're looking forward to as well.
Yeah, that sounds great. Let's just start in southern Brazil, because that's where the story is the most straightforward. But they were essentially very wet in October, with the number two soybean-producing state, Paraná, having been number two wettest over the last 42 years in the month of October. But the interesting thing is that it stopped raining ever since then. They're now going to have the driest November-December period in more than 42 years of record. And the only year that's even close to as dry as it's been this year was in 1985. In 1985, the soybean yield in the state of Paraná, which again is the number two soybean producer in Brazil, they had their lowest soybean yield on record by a pretty substantial margin. And that was largely driven by all the dryness that we had in November and December. Now, some people might be saying, well, January weather matters as well, and it certainly does, but keep this in mind. In January of 1986, they were much wetter than normal, or at least a little bit wetter than normal. Maybe that'd be a more fair statement, with about 7 inches of rain across the state of Paraná, and they still had that really low soybean yield. There's not any rain in the forecast through the end of the year, and then there are some chances once we get into the first 5 days of January. Those will need to pan out. And that will be what everybody's focused on once they get back from the holiday, to see how much rain is coming up and whether or not it's too late, depending on ground reports.
Are other areas of South America suffering or doing well?
Well, Rio Grande do Sul, which is to the south of Paraná, and that is the number three soybean producing state, they're in a very similar situation. It's been a little bit wetter than it was in 1985 over the last 2 month period. But if you just take December alone, they're going to have the driest December in more than 42 years of record across the state. And their soybeans are planted a little bit later, and there still is time for them to recover as we move into next year. But the stage is basically set for problems to develop in Rio Grande do Sul. Paraguay, which is also a pretty large soybean producing country, they make about 10 million metric tons of soybeans each year, and they're right next to Rio Grande do Sul and Paraná. And they're experiencing similar weather with basically having been very dry throughout the last couple of months. And the forecast there is not very promising for rain, with a lot of hot weather, a lot of dry weather into next year. And then again, that same chance for thunderstorms in early January starts to become a focal point. So all in all, highly unusual what's happened in the southern part of Brazil. To the north, which is where more soybeans are produced, in Mato Grosso, they're the number one soybean producing state with about one quarter of the country's crop. Well, they've been super wet. They had their wettest November in more than 42 years, and they're going to be the wettest over the November-December period since at least 2001, and maybe even surpassing 2001 if we can get some decent rains of more than 4 inches through the end of the year. So we're looking at very wet conditions north, very dry conditions south, and it's just going to be a matter of time to try and see what happens to the Brazil and Paraguay crops.
And in Argentina?
Well, Argentina's had decent rains throughout most of the season to this point, but keep in mind, soybeans are only around two-thirds planted, so we're still early in the season in Argentina, just because everything there is about 1 month behind what happened in Brazil and Paraguay. Going forward, it will be hot and dry in Argentina into next year. The same weather pattern we've been talking about in Brazil is also affecting them too. So it is a change from where we've been earlier. They also have that same chance for thunderstorms in the first part of January. And that's going to need to be a pattern change, because if we only receive a few thunderstorms in the first week of January and then go right back into the same pattern that developed over the last couple of weeks, well, then you'll have to start thinking about Argentina as well. But Argentina still has a lot of time to go, because if we get a lot of rain later in January or February, that could negate some of the potential problems that would happen between them. But basically, there's a lot to watch in South America for a change.
Hey, thank you. And you have a great holiday.
Yeah, you have a great holiday too. And have your people check out Keystone.net online if they want to get these reports in real time, because this is the kind of stuff we talk about every day.
Indeed. That's Mike Tenuri. He's with tstorm.online. Again, that's tstorm.online. It's a temporary web address to find all the information from him, and eventually it will go back to tstorm.net. But check it out if you want, tstorm.online. You've been listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this last trading day of the week. Tomorrow, the markets are closed. You have a very good winter break. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.